Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is absolutely favorite Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News. In addition to his always informative Twitter feed, Lovett's Monday column is a must-read for state government watchers. It's the top. Ken Lovett, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. So having a nice summer, are you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I wrote a column recently about Cuomo and the edifice complex, basically picking up on what Rockefeller taught everybody. You know, you can spend a lot of money on something like the Tappan Zee Bridge, which Cuomo is doing, or LaGuardia Airport rebuilding. We saw maybe presidential candidate Joe Biden saying to Governor Cuomo, "You're the best governor in the country." Extraordinary statement, and leading me to the idea that maybe Cuomo sees a vice presidential nod as a possibility. And they know when they build these things that they don't have to pay for them. It's like your mortgage, you know, you pay for it way down the road. First, all you do is pay the interest. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think the governor does like the image of getting things done. Correct. That's been his narrative that he puts out there. Oh, the Tappan Zee, they talked about it for 20 years, and now we're getting it done. We don't know how it's going to be paid for yet, but that's not an issue, apparently. But that's a big deal. So, and having just gone over the Tappan Zee the other day, it looks impressive. They're putting, it's moving quickly, the new bridge. And then LaGuardia. Now, you got to put it in the context of where the governor is politically, too, though. I mean, we've seen him, the LaGuardia announcement, certainly something he's been talking about for a while, but it came in a summer where his poll numbers are down to historic lows. It came at a time where he was being beaten up by Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York City. And the governor spent about 2 weeks trying to build up his numbers in New York City, and LaGuardia being one of those issues that he made a big deal about. It's something now that he's trying to reach out to the left on a lot of issues, and he's trying to do a lot more in New York City than we've seen him do over his first 5 years.
Which is interesting that you raise the New York City thing, because there's a poll out as we speak showing that, to put it mildly, the mayor's numbers are going down. Cuomo's numbers are certainly going down. As I have said so many times, they are on a path of mutual self-destruction.
Yeah, and Cuomo, though, in New York City is actually doing better than the mayor, in a lot of respects. And it's interesting to see, because that's really got to kill the mayor, you know. I'm not sure what the mayor's strategy is right now. He went after the governor really hard. I think it was more, the mayor was being criticized in certain circles from the left, his own base, for not doing certain things. And I think the mayor, when he went after the governor, was kind of preaching to the choir. He verbalized what a lot of people on the left have complained about with the governor, and they liked that. The problem was he then backed off. He didn't do anything with it. He had one outburst, and then he went away on vacation, and then he went to Italy, and then he went to all these different things, and he never followed it up. So it was a one-shot blast. But the governor not only kept knocking him publicly, but then started doing stuff in his backyard. He announced the wage board minimum wage recommendation for, a $15 minimum wage in New York City. He announced it for the fast food workers. That's something where the image is, the mayor talks about it, I got it done. He announced, with Eric Schneiderman, another darling of the left,
Attorney General,
that he was going to give the AG the power to look into, issues where the police, where civilians are killed by the police. These are all things the left really wanted, and the governor decided to go into New York City, surround himself with a lot of the groups that tend to shift toward the mayor, and said, "Look what I'm accomplishing."
Yeah. Well, that's easy to say, but I still think the fact that the governor, who is perceived by some as a bully, is making, this is my own view of it, making a mistake, because He doesn't need to. He doesn't need to do that. But he I try to get inside his mind and say, Governor, why are you on this hell-bent to destroy de Blasio thing, except that you see eventually in the long run that maybe you're going to be running for president and de Blasio is taking the left with him and that somehow you have to destroy him now before he gets too powerful?
Well, I think it's a little of everything. I think that's part of it. I think the governor doesn't have a reputation of playing well with in the sandbox with others.
Including Schneiderman, who you mentioned
Schneiderman, including Thomas DiNapoli, the comptroller, including the mayor. So that's another issue. He wants to be the top dog. You had the mayor running around trying to bring not only the state Democratic Party, but the left, National Party left. He's going around the country and the world and in the state trying to be a major Democratic figure. And the governor wants to be that himself. The problem is the governor has been up until this point more to the center of the Democratic Party. He's angered the unions. He's angered a lot of the base on the left.
He gets the unions back by building everything, right?
A lot of those unions weren't opposed to him in the first place. It's more the public sector unions that really don't like him. That's the teacher unions. You know, they don't care about the building stuff. That's, CSEA and PETH. Those unions are still not fond of him, but certainly the construction unions and the building and trades unions, are. I'll tell you, though, I took an unscientific poll of where the governor is right now. I was down at the Nassau Coliseum this week for Billy Joel, his last concert. It's the last show at the Nassau Coliseum before they basically, renovate the whole thing. And the governor, who's friends with Billy Joel, was asked to, introduce him. So they announced, please, ladies and gentlemen, the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo.
Let me guess. Booze all over the place.
Loud and sustained. 17,000 people.
Just like at the ball game.
So just like in a ball game, 17,000 people. It was loud. I was surprised, but at how loud it was. He won them back eventually when he started talking about Billy Joel. But man, it was an. And look, I mean, to be real, politicians at these kind of events never typically get applause.
But no, they get booed.
But it was loud and sustained.
That's so interesting, Ken Lovett. Meantime, in New York State, we have these two institutions called the Assembly and the Senate. Nobody knows squat about these things. They don't really know, So now you get Shelley Silver being indicted. You get Dean Skelos, the head Republican in the Senate, being indicted and out and being replaced. Now you get a guy named Libous. Oh, yeah. Okay, out there. Write in who Tom Libous is and tell me who that is. So now you get another guy from Syracuse taking the place of the deputy and Flanagan from Long Island. So what do you make of the invisibility of all of this to the populi?
I think there's a few things. One, I don't think people know the legislature that well anyway, traditionally.
Sure.
They'll know them, when there's scandal. I think traditionally, and polls have shown this, the public has a very low opinion of the legislature. However, they like their own guys. If they know any of them, if they know their own guys, and you'll see poll after poll, throw the bums out, 60% say, but, 60% want to keep their guy.
So interesting you say that. I was eating dinner last night with a retired teacher from Long Island who fits squarely into, always been good to us. Our guy has always been good to us.
Yeah, and I think, too, the public is really, we've had, over 30 cases over the last decade or so where lawmakers have left under an ethics cloud or been charged criminally or convicted criminally. And I think the public is just turning off even more than they used to.
Sure.
And the reason you could say that, you look last year, the gubernatorial election, what was it, a 30% turnout, one of the all-time low turnouts. You see it in New York City, the Mayor de Blasio was elected with one of the all-time low turnouts. And on top of that, they just don't seem to care anymore, the public. I think they've come to expect this bad behavior, this bad boy and girl behavior on the part of the legislature. And the evidence of that was last year, three incumbent state legislators and one incumbent congressman were all under indictment and all won re-election. Now they've all been convicted and had to give up their seats since. But can you imagine? That used to be a disqualifying factor. If you were indicted, there was no way you even thought of running again. Now it's like, oh, well, he's indicted. Big deal.
You know, Ken Lovett, I ask my students all the time, I say, what do your parents think of politicians? And they say, they dismiss it all by saying, they say they're all a bunch of crooks. So once that becomes ingrained, it's almost as if you have to live with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the question then would be, what do you think of politicians? Because even, you know, you don't see a lot of young people getting involved in voting even more. You know, the age of the voter tends to be older, and, you know, that's going to be an issue. So when you get guys elected, you know, you saw the mayor and one of Cuomo's old aides, Steve Cohen, once, you know, said this after the mayor won with a landslide, Mayor de Blasio, with 70%+ of the vote in heavily Democratic New York. You know, Steve Cohen mentioned, yeah, but is it a landslide when only 20% of the vote came out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you got 70% of 70% of 20%.
And did he say the same thing when his guy, Governor Cuomo, won with a million less votes?
He did not, but I did a column that actually did point that out, yes.
Indeed you did. Okay, so now there's this guy, he's invisible, from Syracuse, Senator DeFrancisco, used to be the head of the Finance Committee, in the Senate, powerful position. And now he's moving up because Libous had to leave from Binghamton. He had to leave because he was convicted. And how is this going to affect the way things are?
Look, the splits that are in the Senate are still in the Senate. You know, I think John Flanagan came in. He barely beat DeFrancisco for the top spot of Senate Majority Leader. I think it was 18-16 or something, or 18-17, something like that, with the vote. And but he barely won. A lot of upstaters, you know, Flanagan did get five or six upstaters, but a lot of the upstate senators were not happy that another downstater, particularly one who voted in favor of Governor Cuomo's gun law, that the SAFE Act, that he was made speaker. So, Flanagan smartly picked DeFrancisco as the deputy.
Well, but hasn't that always been sort of the case, Ken, that this, you know, the Long Islanders get one and the upstaters
get one? Oh, absolutely. But he could have picked Kathy Young, who supported him, who supported his bid for majority leader. He could have picked, you know, Jim Seward, who also supported him. But he picked DeFrancisco, who's well-respected. The upstaters like him. But the issues that split the conference are still issues that are going to split the conference.
So the gun is one. What else you got?
Gun is one. What else did they do? I mean, that's the big stuff. More of the socially liberal stuff. You know, is more stuff going downstate? There are a lot of issues that the Senate, they feel that a lot of the upstaters feel that the Senate has gone too far along with the governor on different issues.
But it's a given, isn't it, that upstate is in real economic trouble?
Yeah.
It's just a given. Everybody accepts it. And what are you going to do now? Cuomo, I think, to his credit, came in and really wanted to get whatever political umph he could out of changing things upstate. Tried, still a mess.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors behind why upstate is a mess. You know, a governor gets credit when things are going good, even if they had nothing to do with it. And certainly if things don't improve, they take the blame. He's paid a lot of attention to Buffalo. Now he's focused on Rochester. You know, they just made an announcement of a major, techno company coming to Rochester. He's taking it one community at a time. Ironically, it's all the communities he lost. So it seems like once he loses a city, he then goes back and tries to win them back with this stuff. But upstate is hurt, and there's a lot of issues. Look, Hillary Clinton promised 200,000 upstate jobs, and which is silly for a U.S. senator to promise who's running for U.S. Senate, because how much can they really impact? But, upstate has been shedding jobs for decades now, and no one seems to have the answer to turn it around.
Now, what we call the goo-goos, or the good government groups, are calling for ethics reform special session in the legislature, which means, we're going to give them a razor blade and expect them to cut their own throats. Is that going to happen? No, there's no way, right?
Zero. No, there's no way. The governor has said, we did ethics reform this year, and we increased disclosure, and we couldn't get them to do the other stuff that we wanted them to do, campaign finance reform and other issues, closing the LLC loophole. So why would I bring them back and have them vote on something that they're just going to vote down again? As in the Senate, the Assembly claims to want these things, and they do vote on them every year. But the question is, if they knew it was going to pass, would they vote on it?
Yeah, well, the Assemblymen, who are the Democrats, who are always in a great position, you're so right, of voting for ethics reform, knowing that the Senate is going to vote against it, which leads to the next question, which is the control of the Senate. The governor, it's so evenly balanced that the governor is now supporting a candidate for the Libous seat in Binghamton in the Southern Tier. And does she have a chance of winning, even though there are a lot of Republicans up there?
Well, it's, you know, there are 11,000 more Republicans. It's certainly an uphill battle, but this is someone who's won in the area. She was the Broome County executive, and I think she has a chance. Let's face it, a lot of people are watching to see what the governor, what that support means. What does it tell you about a governor? A, that it's news that he's supporting the candidate from his own party.
Right.
B, there's a lot of people who are skeptical about how much he's really supporting and what he'll do. The Democrats want to see if he will provide the funding, raise money, tap into his vast network. The state party has money, provide support for people to go up there and do the grassroots stuff. That's going to prove how invested he is, because the reality is the governor is not hugely popular in that area. So for him to go in and start campaigning for her may be the
kiss of death.
Yeah, it could be. But, getting the money there, and even if they lose it, getting a lot of money so the Democrats, the Senate Democrats, don't have to raise it and then spend it on their own, going into next year where they want to take it. That's even more important. They don't want to go bankrupt, on this race and then go in next year, behind the eight ball.
Yeah. So, but he can also claim by doing this that, you see, you're all wrong. I really am for the Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge, we talked about him trying to win back the party. This is one way he's going to do it. But again, people are skeptical and saying, well, show me, show me what you're going to do with the money. But, taking on a race, which he very rarely gets involved in any races, and taking on a race this early, usually if he does endorsements, it's like the last week he throws out a piece of paper or he attends a rally. If he really gets involved here, it'll send a message that maybe next year he'll try and help tip the Senate. I mean, he's under a lot of pressure right now from his own party. On the other hand, there are skeptics and cynics, a lot of them, who will say he picked a race knowing that the Republicans are likely going to win it. He has a wink and a nod with John Flanagan, saying, hey, I got to do this to secure my base. But don't worry about it. We'll still, work well together, because I know you're probably going to win the seat anyway.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. So things are so equal in the Senate that one or two defections, somebody gets convicted of a crime and has to leave. So you have that, a Republican losing, as we've just mentioned. And now Senator Sampson, a Democrat, he loses too. So it's one from column A and one from column B.
And Sampson, though, there's no doubt will be replaced by a Democrat.
Yeah, sure.
That district in Brooklyn is heavily Democratic.
Sure.
But right now, as it stands, going into next year, assuming all things stay equal and the Republicans take the Libous seat, the Democrats theoretically would have to pick up one seat to have a numerical majority. They would have, with the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, which is five members who split off from the regular Democrats, with Simcha Felder, the Democrat from Brooklyn, who actually sits with the Republicans, you would have 32 Democrats if they pick up one seat. The thinking is if they can pick up two seats, then Felder would be kind of forced to come back into the fold because they would have enough Democrats to run the chamber. But let's not forget, they've had the numerical
majority
before and didn't have control of the chamber, which is...
And didn't know how to behave.
Well, no, they had the majority in 2009 and 10 and didn't know how to behave. But in 2011, they had 32 Democrats but didn't control the chamber because the IDC entered into a governing coalition with the Republicans.
Well, tell me about this, Jeff Klein and the IDC. Some people call them the traitors. Tell me...
some people call them power brokers now. Yeah,
so let's assume that the Democrats pick up a couple more. Mm-hmm. Will the IDC still have enough votes to keep the Republicans in power?
They would. The question is, will they?
Uh-huh.
They see what's going on, and the governor may choose to get involved and say, you've got to start.
Why would he do that when in fact, this governor seems to be in absolute favor of keeping the Republicans in power in the Senate?
Absolutely. But times are changing in his party. He's taking a lot more heat from his own party, his own base. I think he would try, if they did get back together, I think he would try to use the IDC, much like he used the Republicans, to block you know, certain more liberal initiatives he doesn't want to do. Because the IDC tends to be a little bit more conservative anyway for the Democrats. More
Jeff
moderate.
Klein of the Bronx does?
So on the financial stuff, you know, the property tax cap stuff, he could use the IDC to block votes if he needed it.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Well, you had a great column last week on the State Board of Elections and their enforcement unit. Now, those people in the State Board of Elections are basically appointed by the governor, right?
Yeah, well, in the enforcement unit, yes. Yeah. Not the. What happened was you have a Board of Elections that is made up of four people, two Republicans, two Democrats, and basically they've done nothing for decades.
They hew to the official line of their masters.
So when they're asked, should we, you know, proceed on this investigation, for years, it would be a 2-2 vote. You know, if it was the Republicans would vote against it and the Democrats would vote for it, or vice versa, yeah, depending on who they were looking at. So as part of the deal, the controversial deal, to shut down the Moreland Commission, the governor's anti-corruption commission last year, there was an ethics reform package. Part of that was creating this independent, other than from the governor, this independent enforcement unit within the Board of Elections that can do its own thing. They do have to get permission to move ahead with subpoenas from the board and to refer cases to law enforcement. But the chief investigative officer, the enforcement officer, can break ties. So there's no more 2-2. She can go in and break a tie. So what we found out was, since September, they have referred 7 cases for potential criminal prosecution to local district attorneys or the attorney general's office. Most of them would, if they proceed, would result in felony charges. So that's interesting. We also know that the Risa Sugarman, the chief enforcement officer, asked for permission to go with 19 subpoenas in as part of her investigations. She got permission to do 17 of them. 2 of them she had to break the tie to move forward. But so 17 of them, if you take the 7 that already were referred, there were 10 cases where there were subpoenas out. 2 have been closed without referral, which means there's 8 more cases that they're looking at where subpoenas are actually out there that could lead to more criminal referrals.
Well, so that's so interesting. But help us all understand this, Ken Lovett. If, in fact, this is the way that it works, there's also hell to pay about who gets to be in that group, right? I mean, how much influence is the governor going to have?
Well, I mean, he appointed Risa Sugarman. She hired her own staff. It's not a really a group. The unit.
And she's staying, right? I mean,
she's staying. Yeah. But, you know, like what we've seen in a lot of positions, she used to work for him, you know, in the attorney general's office, right, the governor's right office. And we see that Andrew Cuomo seems to like, on all these enforcement kind of bodies, you know, the state ethics panel known as J-COPE, you know, all the all those executive directors had worked for Cuomo. You know, the state police, the inspector general, you know, they all worked for him, the state police superintendent, and now the chief enforcement officer. So there are those who complain that how can we feel comfortable that these people are independent enough to proceed with an investigation against the governor or the governor's office if there was something to proceed with when he's appointed all these people and they all used to work for him and they owe him his career, their careers. You know, I don't know how you prove a negative. We'll see what these people do and if there's ever any kind of violations. But certainly the fact that Sugarman's office, the enforcement office in the Board of Elections, has referred 7 cases for criminal prosecution, that should send shockwaves throughout the system.
Yeah. Well, Ken Lovett, this has been a very interesting program. I have to say that maybe we should change the name of the program from the Capital Connection to the Ken Lovett Show, because you come on with regularity and you tell us what you're seeing from your perch at the Daily News and what you've been doing. So I want to thank you, as always, for doing a great job for us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're out of time. Our guest on the Capital Connection has been Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. Most of us regard him as by far the best political reporter in Albany. Ken, again, thanks for joining us.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.